So you've been listening to Poptronica with Eric, and you're listening to KZSU Stanford at 90.1 on the FM dial. You can pick us up there if you're in the Bay Area. If you're further away, get on your computer, get on the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Sherry Huber has been a Zen student and teacher for many years, speaking, writing, typing.
A lot of typing.
And another book coming out very soon.
Yes, When You're Falling, Dive.
When You're Falling, Dive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw the cover art for the book.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it occurred, it's, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's two dolphins who are in the air sort of crossing. And I was thinking about diving in the context of graceful and not something, not sort of in the sense, when I was thinking about when you're falling, it's, you know, something's wrong, something needs to change, life needs to be different, mm-hmm. as opposed to, wow, this
falling
is
scary.
Falling
for
is
most
scary.
People. It's not the whole idea of falling. It's not going to end well.
Yes.
Right? That's the, otherwise it's called something else, right? So the very choice of words, it's kind of a scary thing. And
yes.
Then we get into the dive part of the program, which has a whole different feel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So life is happening, not the way I want it. And yet, I can be with that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
Yeah,
instead
of resisting
it.
Just let go and go with it.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
let go and go with it. So that'll be coming out in May.
In May, yes.
In May. Great. If you'd like to join us today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Operators are standing by. I've always wanted to say that.
And it's actually true. They are.
It is actually true.
Lined up there waiting to receive these calls.
Exactly. And if you want to reach us by email as well, you can send email to openair@kzsu.org. And I also want to mention your new website, which is www.sherryhuber.com, mm-hmm. which has a lot of great stuff.
It does.
Yeah, I was excited to see the writing archive there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fascinating.
And I don't know if the audio clips are on.
They're getting there.
They're getting there? Good.
Yes.
And, so that's kind of fun, just to tune in and hear a little snippet of something that we hope will be uplifting. And
exciting.
And help people. You know, the whole point of this, of everything that we do, is an attempt to assist people to come back to the moment, to come back to the breath, for even a split second to remember who they really are, their authentic mm-hmm. nature. And then move into life from there. So hopefully all of these things that we do, but particularly something like the audio clips, will do that. Maybe somebody just, you know, keeps it on their computer and then tunes in and hears a little encouragement and gets on with life.
Yes, yeah. So everything that we're doing is an encouragement to come back to the moment.
Yes.
To see what's here.
Yeah, to support conscious, compassionate awareness. Mm-hmm. We live in a world of distraction. That's what the world is. That's what society is. It's devoted to distraction. And of course, distraction is the fast track to suffering. So, what we're trying to do is turn our attention away from all of the distractions, get back here, get back into the body. That's why I always mention the weather. that feeling of being in your body and being in your senses. Really aware of life living us, even for a moment, just helps put everything into perspective.
Uh-huh. You can be right there
mm-hmm.
in your body. Whatever's going on is going on.
Yeah, and you're breathing. You're here, present. You're alive.
Yes.
Very good. It's much better, actually, than being distracted, although, of course, you know, all the money in the world is going into convincing us that being distracted and buying the next thing is going to give us what we gave up in order to be distracted and convinced that we need something other than what's here.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're never going to feel any better. We're never going to be any happier than we are when we're truly present.
Yes.
So, you know, we can either try all of these, buy all the products, go on all the mental journeys, the fantasies, all the promises. Or we can just get in the body, get with the breath, be here in our life in this moment, and that's as good as it gets.
Experience it.
Yeah.
So you said that we give up what we have in order to pursue this distraction.
We give up what we want, actually.
So what is it that we're...
It's even more than we give up what we have. Because people will say often, well, you know, what is this present moment stuff? I come back to the present moment. You know, I'm in pain. I don't have the job that I want. My relationship isn't going that well. You know, money is... What is this present moment that you're so excited about? Well, that's not the present moment that we're talking about. This is a problem, that's a problem. That's the distraction. When we can drop all of that for even a split second, just get into that space between the thoughts, then we have what we actually want. So we're constantly leaving our authentic nature, the inherent goodness and purity that animates us, that is the source of our joy, our hope, our enthusiasm, our excitement, our well-being, all we leave that. We go up into our conditioned minds and we have endless conversations with ourselves and with others about all sorts of things that are not particularly helpful or productive, and that promise us that it can deliver. Our conditioned mind is constantly promising that it will deliver to us what we want. If we'll just go along with this next series of thoughts, with this plan of attack, with this exploring this old, tired story about what I did wrong all of my life, that somehow all of that is going to give me the life experience that I want. When in fact, dropping all of that, getting here in this moment, will give me the life experience that I want. I don't need anything else. Everything that I could dream of is available to me right now. I just have to turn my attention to it. It's cheap. It's easy. It's always available. It's never out of stock. You know, it doesn't need to be back ordered. You know, no rain checks. It's always there for us. It's the most extraordinary good deal.
Yes.
It's for everybody. It's not just for the special few. You know, you don't have to be particularly intelligent or educated or privileged or any of those things. It is built into the system. We all have it.
Yes. Amazing. Mm. So as you talked about, we spend our time in distraction, conversations in our mind with ourselves, with others.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us on a track to suffering.
Yes.
Because it's spent in the past, it's spent in the future.
Exactly.
Life is here going on. I'm not here for it.
Yes. Yeah. And again, a lot of people feel like they don't want to be here for it because this is not a particularly good time. I'd rather have my fantasy. I'd rather have my memories. But they haven't yet experienced the present moment that we're talking about. Once you drop into that place of peace and freedom and well-being and joy, you get it that there is nothing out there that's better than that. And it's not a matter of choosing that over something else. From that present moment experience, we include then everything.
That's amazing. So it's all
right
available
here
to us.
Every moment.
Wonderful.
A good deal.
That's a good thing. I guess we need to keep talking because we still have...
Yeah, you know...
You've given everybody the answer.
Well, you know, the Christians talk about what Jesus taught as the good news. And it is good news. It is the good
news.
It's all right here available to us now in any moment we choose to avail ourselves of it. It's not that it comes and goes. We come and go. It's not that it is doing something other than being with us. We are doing something other than being with it.
Uh-huh.
So all we have to do is stop doing everything else, and here we are.
Here we are. We bring our willingness, and it's available to us.
Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller on the line.
Excellent.
Great. I'd like to welcome George from Fremont. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
I was listening last week, and there was a guy who called in. And actually, I've been listening to the show kind of reluctantly because I used to really enjoy the music that was playing right now. But
sorry.
No, I've gotten into it, though, because okay. I've given it a chance. And I actually, sometimes you lose me, but last week this guy called in, and he was like really obsessed with you or something,
uh-huh.
and he was saying that he wanted nothing more than to come and learn something from you.
Uh-huh.
And I loved your answer. How you dealt with that? How you said something to the effect of, like, you know, you need something from me. You know what you want to learn from me. And he said, yeah. And he said, so you already know it.
Exactly.
And I've just been thinking about that a lot because, I don't know, that just inspired me. And I've been kind of going back to that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Just that idea that, you know you want to learn something. You kind of already know it.
Exactly. So one of our books is entitled, That Which You're Seeking is Causing You to Seek. So,
right.
Yeah, so something stirs you inside. You want to have an experience. Well,
right.
If you didn't already have the experience, you wouldn't know that you wanted the experience. And then it's just like what we're talking about now. Then we leave that experience, right, to go out and try to get that experience.
Right.
And, of course, as soon as we leave the experience to go get the experience, then we're frustrated. You know, well, this yeah. isn't it. You know, why can't I? Yeah, it's all just backwards.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So and it applies to everything, doesn't it?
It does. It's mm-hmm. kind of it does kind of confuse me though. I mean, because it's like you have to just live in the experience that you're having.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. But well, yeah, it's hard. It's really weird.
Well, the thing about it is, see if this is your experience. It's only confusing when you think about it. Right? So you heard it and you went, that's right. I get that. That's true. And then you think about it and so what we do is go up into our conditioned minds and we try to make conditioned sense out of it. And it doesn't make sense.
Right.
So then you think, oh, geez, I must have been deluding myself. And then you stop thinking about it and it makes sense again.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the experiences that we really need to have, we can't really seek.
That's exactly right. So somebody said about faith, which is a lot like what we're talking about, faith can't be taught. It can only be caught.
Okay,
so, yeah, isn't it? So you're in a situation, and maybe you're around somebody who is very open, and suddenly you feel very open. Now, they mm-hmm. couldn't say, all right, George, here's what you need to do. You need to open up. You need to, you need to be more open, more vulnerable, more. Every time they say it, you just close down. But mm-hmm. if they're really open, suddenly you're really open. Now,
yeah.
again, if you start thinking about it, you go, that doesn't make any sense. I'm not, I don't get that. But on an intuitive level, on a level that transcends our conditioned thinking, it's all very simple, easy, and straightforward. That's Zen.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, my phone's dying here. So.
Well, thanks for sharing its last moments with us.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
All right.
Okay,
thanks,
bye.
George. Bye.
Thanks for calling, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, it's really interesting. I've heard you talk before about not having another thought for the rest of your life and being
more brilliant than you can even imagine.
I was going to substitute happy, but brilliant? Sure.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And so the people that we really admire in terms of, well, Einstein is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. The thing that was so frustrating for people about Einstein is that he couldn't actually tell them how he was doing what he was doing. Now, if it were just a regular person who is coming up step by step logically with some sort of formula, well, you can follow that. But that's not what he was doing. He was going to that place between the thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and he was just soaring around the universe. And then he would report what was true for him. And people are saying, you know, where did you get? How did you? And so, you know, if you've ever read much of Einstein, he was far less a scientist than he was a spiritual philosopher.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as he talked about, I think, this idea that you can't solve a problem with the mind that created it, or something to that effect.
That's right. So the Zen way of talking about that, problems exist in conditioned mind. Mm. So we come into the world, and then we are given a reality. And we're given that reality through osmosis, by simply being around the people who are raising us. And then we're given that reality directly from information that comes from adults and older children and then teachers and the society in general. So we have this particular reality that we are seeing through. And all of our problems exist in that reality. You can't solve those problems. And, of course, from a Zen perspective, the reason you can't solve them is because they don't exist. Because they're not real. Because they're completely made up. So when we step into that clarity, that brilliance, that expansiveness that is available to us, the way I talk about it, you know, when you go through that space between the thoughts, that place that Einstein spent his life cruising around in, then the problems don't exist. And that is obvious. And so if a problem doesn't exist, it's solved.
If a problem doesn't exist, it's solved.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, boom, you just move to that larger perspective and realize, well, that's not a problem.
Yes.
Once you're in conditioned mind.
Yes.
Trying to look through, it's like, putting on a pair of red sunglasses. And trying to see life as anything other than red. It's not it's not going to happen.
Yes.
You can imagine it not red. You can pretend that it's blue or green or something else, but what you're seeing is red.
Exactly.
As soon as you take those glasses off, you're not seeing that any longer.
Exactly.
And it's that literal and that dramatic. When we can move out of conditioned mind into that spaciousness, brilliance is available. Wisdom is available.
Wow.
Yeah.
And as you said before, every moment.
Every moment.
And it's free.
For everybody, and it's free. We are so lucky.
We are so lucky. And the other thing that came to mind to me, sort of another way of thinking about it, is the problem exists to the extent that we put our attention on it.
Exactly. Problems have to be maintained. Look at the media.
Mm-hmm.
A problem exists for as long as it's kept in front of people. Now, we do that on our own, of course.
Well, we've learned.
Yeah, we have a problem, and we have to think about it all the time. So people tell me often that what they're doing is obsessing. They just get a problem going, and then they obsess about it.
Yes.
Well, what would happen to the problem if you stopped obsessing about it? You would forget about it.
Yes.
It would go away. Now, people say, no, it wouldn't. You're just not thinking about it. But it's the same thing. It doesn't exist anywhere except in your mind.
Exactly. Exactly. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We have another caller on the line. I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on the line with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening, Sherry. This is Beth.
Hi.
Hi. I called last week, too.
Oh, good for you. You beat the rush. If you dial fast enough, you can get in ahead of everybody else, and we can talk to you every week.
Yeah, you don't have to wait on hold for hours. And...
Yeah. So what's going on this week?
Well, I just had a really interesting experience with desire.
Uh-huh. Anything you can tell us about on Worldwide Radio?
there's an artist, James Turrell, who came to town. He has this exhibit dealing with light.
Uh-huh.
Very dynamic show. And I skipped going to my sangha this evening to go see this guy and hear him talk.
Mm-hmm.
And when I showed up an hour early, there was about four times the amount of people that could get in.
Oh, dear.
There that could get in. And I made it all the way up to the door in this crush of people, and I was the first person who did not get in.
Oh, dear.
It was so fascinating, just watching that whole process.
Oh, my.
And just watching everybody else's reactions and how they would go to, you know, anger or, you know, and the manipulator coming in and trying to figure out how to get in.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know... you know, it just didn't seem right that I should be the first person to not get in.
Yeah. 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 Of course, I don't think it would have felt better if you'd been the 50th person who didn't get in, would it? Or maybe it would, because it wouldn't have been so close.
Right.
Yeah, so that's that almost, right? No little stuffed doggy.
No, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm. So disappointment.
Disappointment, yep.
Turning to...
I can figure this out.
Uh-huh.
I'm so close. There has to be one more point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there has to be a way.
There has to be a way, yeah. And desire, you know, just really coming in. And the thing is that I could still see this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it wasn't suffering.
Uh-huh. It was kind of like a workshop?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. You didn't go to sitting meditation and group discussion tonight, but you had a workshop on your own.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which it always is when we're paying attention, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not real comfortable being in a crowd of people, so there was that aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, and just watching all this stuff come up in myself and then seeing what I was projecting onto other people.
Yeah, especially a crowd of disappointed people.
And then watching the people who were having to tell 500 people that they couldn't go in and how they were doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different kind of personalities and so forth that came up.
So it was a projection workshop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, projection being quite, all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So projecting what the people around you were feeling, what they were thinking and what they were doing, projecting onto the people who were doing crowd control, what they were thinking and feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how they, I mean, it's like one person was like, you know, gently pushing people down the hallway and out of the way, and somebody else was, you know, doing the authority and clear the hall. And then people were, like, not moving.
And then somebody was out there getting what do they call that? Gas. The tear gas bombs ready, right? Yeah, so all of the steps of from gentle mother figure to, yeah.
Yeah, everybody was there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, I'm glad I wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that aspect too of, you know, like, was this important enough for me to miss Sangha?
Well, I was wondering if there were any voices that came up that said, and so what you should have done tonight instead of this is go to meditation.
Right.
Yeah, because if you'd gone to meditation, you wouldn't have been disappointed. But then if you'd gone to meditation, you wouldn't have had this great projection workshop. So there is that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like when I let go of my desire, then I can be fascinated, or I can just be with whatever comes up, because I had a whole different experience than what I intended.
Mm-hmm.
I intended to hear James Turrell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and instead you heard your internal workings.
Yeah, and if I had been so fixated on seeing James Turrell, I would have missed this whole experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, you would have just gotten caught up, gone unconscious, let conditioning act out in the way that it's trained to do, and the whole thing would have been suffering. And not even have the advantage of producing awareness.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be a moment of choice with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it just is kind of, you know, it just all of a sudden I have other options.
Right. Well, to me, the moment of choice comes in each moment that we decide to practice.
Ha.
Right? Each moment that we decide to come back to the breath and be present is a moment of choice, in the sense that we could almost say a habit. We hate to think of it that way, but it's a habit that's going to serve you well in times like this. Right? Because if you had never practiced conscious awareness, I doubt that it would have occurred to you under these stressful circumstances. But because you're used to practicing, because you're used to paying attention to what's going on, watching yourself in this awareness practice sort of way, then that's what happened for you in these circumstances.
So you practice with the 5 and 10 pound weights.
Exactly. Exactly. Then when a building falls on you, you'll be ready. Yeah, exactly so. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there more?
Well, I mean, I can take up, you know, the whole evening, but
we're good for now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week then.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Bye.
Sure. It's interesting. Can you explain to our listeners about Sangha?
The Buddha Well, the Buddha taught many wonderful things. Mm. One of the things that he taught was for us to live in contemplation of body, feelings, and mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we talk about here most of the time, is different ways of doing that, the results of doing that, the resistance to doing that, all, but it's all around living in contemplation of body, feelings, mind in the moment. And he taught about what are called the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi is enlightenment or awakening. And the Buddha actually is a word for Bodhi. Or, mm-hmm. So the Buddha, actually the awakened one or an awakened one.
Yeah.
Dharma is the teaching, what we practice, the understanding. And then Sangha, the group of people who practice together. So Sangha, my teacher used to say, everybody is a Buddhist, whether they think they are or not, because a Buddhist is one who is on a path to awakening. And so in that same way, everyone is Sangha, because we're all practicing together.
Yes.
We may not think about it that way or talk about it that way. Generally, of course, it's meant to refer to the people who are consciously aware that they are practicing in that way.
Yeah.
Even specifically, people who have taken certain vows about how they will live and about their commitment to awakening and ending suffering and that sort of thing. So it can be as broad or as specific as we want to make it.
Yeah. Fascinating. The other thing that occurred to me about Beth's call is this concept of projection, which I project is really huge.
It is really huge. If I could bottle one thing and give it away on every street corner, it would be projection.
Yes.
So simply put, everything in our experience is us. So what I'm doing constantly is projecting my internal world out, seeing it out there, believing that what I'm seeing is out there, and therefore that what I'm seeing is true.
Yes.
And failing to realize, in most cases, that it's all me.
It's all inside.
Yes.
We look outside. We look through what we're experiencing.
Yes. Through our own beliefs and assumptions.
Yes.
And we project those outward.
Yes.
And then we believe it's true.
Yes.
So, the simplest way to talk about it is that a happy person lives in a happy world.
A happy person lives in a happy world.
A hostile person lives in a hostile world. So, is it that way? Well, it's whatever way we project it to be.
Right.
Yeah, so the world is whatever we project it to be. If the world is scary, it's because I'm frightened. If the world is crazy, it's because I feel crazy. Yeah, so we can, you check in. What is your state? Well, you can know by what you're saying and thinking about other people, about life, about the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling hostile. The world looks hostile to me.
That's right.
Only everyone I encounter is a threat.
That's right. And they're hostile. And you not know anything is going on with you at all. You might think you're just perfectly hunky-dunky. You're just a happy human trapped here in this hostile reality where everybody is vicious and violent and dangerous.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Unaware that we're living in conditioned mind.
Yeah.
That not everyone sees the same world that we're seeing.
Can you imagine if people knew that? Yeah. I think all the time how much more polite and how much quieter the world would be if everybody understood projection. I mean, you just would not want to go around pointing your finger and saying who other people are.
Yes.
Because as every little kid knows, it takes one to know one. And and it's even beyond that. It takes one and we're not sure about anybody else. So,
say that again?
Well, it takes one to know one.
Yes.
Assumes that what I'm seeing about you is accurate.
Yes.
But what is really so is it takes one.
Yes.
I am, because I thought it and I said it.
Yes.
And we don't know anything about you.
Yes. Yes.
All I'm doing is revealing myself. He's a deceitful, lying, cheating. Well, I've revealed a lot about me, but nothing about you. And, of course, we're conditioned to see it just the opposite way.
Yes.
You know, now I've revealed who you are. I've said, you know, I've told the world what a lying, cheating scoundrel you are, and I've revealed nothing about me, and it's exactly the opposite of that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we should dedicate the show to projection.
Yes. This one or our upcoming one?
All of them? This one?
Yeah, right. All of our shows forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. We have another caller on the line.
Lovely.
I'd like to welcome Alan from Ohio. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, Sherry. I've just been a listener of your program for 2 weeks now.
Good.
And tonight you said something that made me recall an experience I had when I was 25 years old, which was in 1975. I was driving across this bridge, and suddenly I fell into that space between thoughts. And it's almost as though time stood still for maybe 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this sense of this, all boundaries broke down. There were no problems in this world.
Yeah.
I felt like I was at the center of the universe touching the face of God.
Mm-hmm.
I think my car autopiloted home.
Well, it's fortunately something was helping you, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, because you weren't driving.
So I get home and there's my wife cooking and I said, there are no problems in this world. Ask me anything. And she said, well, what time would you want supper? And all I could laugh and say, yeah. Well, there are no problems.
Yeah, yeah. And it's nice when you're in that state to have somebody who's still grounded.
Oh, she was quite grounded.
Yeah.
She didn't care where I was, but I certainly was not there.
Uh-huh.
And gradually that state, say after 3 hours, ebbed away,
mm-hmm.
and I had the thought as a 25-year-old man, if I could experience this 1 minute a day, then wouldn't life be really worth living?
Yeah.
And, of course, 28 years later, I have not had a revisit of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a question in this, but maybe you can make something of that to pull out of me.
Well, let me ask you this, Alan. What has your relationship been with that? Over the last 28 years.
With that particular experience?
Yeah, I'm curious if you have a feeling of just, wow, what a lucky duck I am to have experienced that, or if it has made life the way most folks live it a little prosaic or a little less thrilling than it might be.
Hmm. Certainly when I look back to that, I look back with awe,
mm-hmm.
as though I was selected for that
mm-hmm.
moment.
Like it was just a grand gift.
Yes, and when I read now about these mystical unions with God, and when the first state is purification, well, that, I felt menthol inside of me.
Yeah.
It was just heavenly.
Yeah. And you think, you read those things, and your response is, yeah. That's true. What they're saying is true.
Well, then I think, like your other caller and the one last week who obsessed about you, which is that notion of, let me see if I can, these things are so difficult to talk about because it's hard to put into words.
Right, because we have to leave that experience to go up into our conditioned mind to talk about it, and there isn't any experience in conditioned mind that's going to connect. So we say something, and it has to be with the understanding, well, no, that's not really it. So it's like, you know, the one of the finger pointing at the moon?
Mm-hmm.
There's that kind of feeling with it. So with that understanding, go ahead.
Okay, well, this is what I've been seeking for the rest of my life.
Sure.
What I had in that moment.
Of course.
And it wasn't triggered by, I think, anything within me.
Right.
It seemed to be pulled out of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It started by my just being thankful
mm-hmm.
and really verbalizing praise for what a beautiful world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what seemed to
mm-hmm.
make the boundaries fall away.
Mm-hmm. Do you know St. Teresa of Avila? You know
I'm
her?
Only familiar by name. I don't know
okay.
any of her words.
Well, that was her practice. She simply thanked God. She lived in thank you. And, gosh, it worked well for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she kind of, you know, she spent a great deal of her life in ecstatic state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think now as I read that, that's a mystical, you know, the mystical union with God, I think I already had it 28 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that I'll ever have it to that degree again, but it, that sense of what that obsessive caller said was that, and your answer is that if it's what you seek is already there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, then I certainly let go of conditioned mind.
Yes.
Inadvertently.
Yes.
As an innocent, as a 25-year-old who didn't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and just slipped into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a grand and glorious thing. I am really happy that you've had the response to it that you have, because over the years I've talked to so many people who have had an experience like that, and it has ruined their lives.
It has ruined their lives.
Yeah, because they everything since then is just, it's just pale and lifeless compared to that. All they want to do is live their life in that experience, which I've always found regrettable, because to me it seems so greedy, you know. To have an experience like that once is so much more than almost anybody has ever. I mean, most people will go to their graves never knowing that such a thing is even remotely available. And so to have been given that as a gift, whew, that's glorious.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you talked about Teresa of Avila, I got a little teary just listening to that precious thank you every moment.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for calling, Alan. What a delight.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Alan. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, was interesting, that experience, and talking about, well, what occurred to me is we have an experience, and we can commit to a practice that leads in that direction.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to me. And I can't think kind of what we were looking at with Alan. To have, you know, even if you don't have the kind of profound experience that Alan was describing, just the desire to awaken. Now, this was, you know, Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen, and a brilliant, brilliant mind. Some people think possibly the most brilliant mind that Japan has ever produced, and they've produced some smart folks.
Uh-huh.
And his view of this is that that desire to awaken is the awakening experience that we are seeking, much as we've been talking about.
Yes.
And again, not everyone has that desire. Not in everyone does that awareness of this greater potential arise. So to have a moment, even a moment of being completely filled with gratitude and feeling that connection to life and that, you know, what all of the words that we could come up with to try to describe that, that is an awakening in itself.
Yes.
So then to do a practice, and there are lots of practices that people can do. Of course, you know, I love Zen, so that's what I do. I meditate and spend as much time as I can manage in the present. But to do something that leads us toward that experience, that represents, that is as close as we can get to that experience, can be not only a way of being present and available should something like that come down the pike again. You know, I'm ready. I'm here. My hands are open. I'll be happy to have that experience again. But it can also be a thank you for having received a gift like that. Just to be someone fortunate enough to have been, the Buddha talked about it as having the intelligence, the awareness, the sensitivity, the inclination, the opportunity to awaken and in suffering is extraordinary. That would occur to a human being is just an extraordinary gift.
Yes.
And so we practice not only to up our chances, but also to say thank you for what we have already received.
For having fallen into this.
Yeah, because living in the present is not just for us. It's a gift to all of life. Every breath that we take that is present is a breath of compassion, and we offer that compassion to all beings. Mm. So it's... You know, it's big.
It can,
it can seem like kind of a little thing we're doing here, but it's really huge.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because I hadn't thought about it in those terms, as my practice is a way of saying thank you for having somehow I came across this path. And
Yeah, whatever that path is, you know, whether it's St. Teresa on her path, whether it's Buddhist, whether it's Hindu, whether it's Muslim, whatever. Whatever it is that someone is sincerely practicing as a way to live in the present in a state of interconnectedness and gratitude.
Yes, yes. Good stuff. Well, we've been rolling along here, and we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in a few moments. If you'd like to join us, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Again, you're listening to Open Air with Shari Huber, and we'll be back. Next up at 6 p.m., we have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend. 9 o'clock, we have Wednesday Night Live with the David Baron Element, who are the winners of Battle of the Bands in Toyon Hall a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
So they're going
to stay around for that.
We have to stay around for that tonight at 9 o'clock, followed by Kathleen at 10 o'clock.
Excellent.
Excellent. Shari, we've had a couple people emailing us. And if you'd like to send in an email question, you can send that to openair@kzsu.org. Here's one of the questions we've received. My general feeling is that my relationships are a part of my life that fit in with all the other interests and activities in my life. I don't want to imply that they don't require a lot of maintenance and work, but my question is, for the whole circle of my life, how much of this pie should/do I get out of my relationship, and how much do I look elsewhere for it? So, for example, I have a strong interest in sports, something that I'll do whether I'm in a relationship or not, so I don't feel like I have to have that match in the person I'm with. For me, the point of being in a relationship is sharing things we do together, but also things that we both individually bring. So I keep trying to figure out which are the essential things I need to have in the relationship versus being okay with looking elsewhere to fulfill that need.
Oh, isn't that an interesting question?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you had people that you enjoyed reading and talking about books with, and people that you enjoy shopping with, and different people to do different sports with.
Yes.
And friends that share work interests. And then you have, it sounds like some sort of a life partner or some romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how many of those things would they have to participate in? Boy, is that an individual, personal thing, isn't it? And something that somebody would have to figure out, we guess, by kind of trial and error. Because it strikes me that this person would want to be as clear of, can I ask he or she, just so I don't stumble over pronouns?
She.
She. Exactly what it is that she wants from this person, right? Is it an intimate relationship? Is it physical? Is it emotional closeness? Is it conversation that you wouldn't have with somebody else? Is it, do you want to live with somebody? Because that's big. If you want to live with somebody, then which, you know, is that what you share? You share a home and maybe go on trips together, and or maybe it's children and or pets, as
or
we
pets.
Heard, we can adopt pets. So, yeah, that's, boy, I don't have any insight, except that it's such an important thing to bring conscious awareness to in the way that she's doing, because otherwise most of us go into things and then realize after it didn't work that we weren't clear about what we thought was going to happen. You know, so I want a relationship I don't know why. Everybody else
has one.
And, you should. And I don't know what it's going to be like or how much time I want to devote. And, do we want our money mixed up together? And do we want children? Or do we want to live together? Do we want to, what am I doing here? So that's very impressive to look at it with that kind of conscious awareness.
Yeah, and it sounds like what you're encouraging is looking inside. Everything I heard you say is asking questions. What do I want? Do I want to share this? Do I want to live together? Do I want emotional intimacy? Exactly what is it that I'm looking for in a relationship?
Yeah, because as a friend of mine used to say, you can't conduct a good interview if you don't know what the job is. And in relationships, sometimes we forget that's kind of the same thing. Here's a role, and I'm looking for somebody to fulfill half of that role. And what do I actually want?
Exactly.
It's kind of cruel to hire somebody for a job and then after they're hired, start telling them what their job description is.
Yes, and at the risk of sharing my experience, that was my experience, is that I went into a relationship and it became obvious later that I didn't know what I want or I wasn't clear about it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's been a trial and error. And sort of behind that is a willingness to continue to look, to continue to try.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go into this. Something is bringing me into this. And I want to go in there wise, eyes as wide open as I can bring.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that it still won't be a workshop and, is as clear
and
as
will
we,
be.
Yeah, as clear as we can be. That doesn't speak to emotions that get tangled up. So somebody was telling me last week about a fellow who was doing an interview process, and he started the thing with, "Now, if you're not interested in getting married, I don't want to waste any time on this."
Yeah.
Which I mean, on the one hand, it's brutal, but on the other, hey, if you're that clear about what you want, then just put your cards on the table. And anybody who can't deal with that, well, you're going to lose them. But then better now than later, really.
Exactly. So he, I project, had a sense of clarity about
what he wanted. He wanted to get married. He wanted family. He wanted a lifetime commitment. And that was all. And he didn't want to get tangled up with anybody, because you can get tangled up with somebody who's just completely wrong for you, and it can be wonderful and exciting and challenging and heartbreaking and all of those things. But if you really know what you want and where you're going, then seems to me to be clear and honest. Of course, I think clear and honest can be romantic. A lot of people don't. A lot of people think, sort of stumbling around in the dark is the only way to be romantic. And I don't agree with that. I think that's way overrated.
Speaking from my experience, I've stumbled around in the dark and, I've gotten to some clarity about what's important to me.
Absolutely.
And I can see where that gentleman is coming from, at least what I project.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for A,
this.
B, C.
Yeah.
If that's what the other person is interested in.
Yeah.
Great.
Then we can have a partnership. If not, then we're wasting one another's time.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people get together and make some kind of commitment, lifetime commitment, with somebody who, if they had done a better interview process, they would realize this is never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't agree. We don't get along. We don't. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that if two people are truly committed and willing to do the work, they can't go beyond anything. But that's a big if.
Yes.
That means the same level of commitment that I need to bring to my own awareness practice, I'm going to need to include another person in.
Mm.
And that, again, that can be challenging and exciting and fulfilling. And it can be a lot of hard work.
Yes.
Whereas if you just found somebody who shared your values, who, is kind of on the same page with you,
yes.
Might be a little easier.
Yeah. So it sounds like what I hear you saying is that wherever you are, you're in a relationship, you're not in a relationship, when you're willing to commit to awakening or being present, being conscious, however we want to talk about it, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
For me and for the other person.
Yeah, and I encourage people all the time because they'll say, you know, well, my partner isn't interested in an awareness practice. And I tell them, you know, it's not a requirement. One person in a relationship mm-hmm. can do that work by themselves. Mm-hmm. It is way easier if there are two of you who are in agreement about what it is that that you value and what you want to put your time and energy and attention into.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Sherry, the lines on the clock are in a row.
Well, they sure
in a vertical
are.
Line.
I know what that means.
Means we're out of time, and we're going to be back next week. I'd like to thank you.
As we like to say, good Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
Good. Say that again?
If the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise.
The good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise, we will be back here next
exactly.
week. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, all of our callers, all of our help. Lori, Frank, Jay, many thanks. If you want to give us a call next week, you can reach us at 650-723-9010. If you want to drop us an email, please send that to openair@kzsu.org.